Welcome to Inside Seaweed, the podcast looking deep into the seaweed industry through the stories of pioneers, entrepreneurs, and innovators. Today's episode is the closing chapter from my recent trip to Portland, Maine. This time, we're going to hear from Courtney Boyd Myers, CEO of Aqua, a meat alternative company making plant-based food from regenerative aquaculture. You're going to find out how Courtney built a brand and managed to get innovative food products made with seaweed in the hands of customers. Her story goes through a steep learning curve with some pretty unexpected lessons, a radical pivot from kelp jerky to kelp burgers, and ultimately a partnership with none other than SpongeBob. So here it goes. And we're back for day two, live from Seaculture Conference US. Welcome everyone. Welcome back if you tuned in yesterday. I'm Fed Gobbi, and with me today is Courtney Boyd Myers, founder and CEO of Aqua.
Hello. So excited to be here, Fede. Thank you so much. I love that there is an Inside Seaweed podcast, and I'm so excited to be here at Sea Agriculture.
Fantastic. And how's everything? Your talk yesterday was really good. You were up on the stage. Congratulations on that. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it was a little different, a little less sciencey, a little more fun and consumer-based, and explaining all of our failures and learnings and wins and mistakes and vomiting sessions from, you know, just all of the getting people to eat more kelp story, right?
Absolutely.
I'm so excited to be here. You know, I think in normal life, if I hear the word kelp somewhere, my whole body turns around and I'm like, who just said that? And now I'm hearing it constantly. And it's just, yeah, it's a pretty cool little club to be in right now.
So was it a tough audience, you find?
No, I think it's, you know, we only got two questions. There were a lot of other hands up in the air. And so who knows what was in it for me. But I think what we're doing is really at like the front end of a very, you know, a long supply chain of kelp. And, you know, we're out there on the grocery store floors convincing shoppers to eat more kelp. And it's, you know, I think sometimes there's a disconnect with the kelp farmers who are growing it. And so it's just important that they understand that if they're going to keep growing it, we got to convince people to eat it. And that's not always easy.
We've got more time today and definitely more questions. So
wonderful. Hit me.
So to start with, I was going to sort of focus on seaweed in general. And since seaweed is one of the many possible solutions that we have available to fight climate change and the environmental crisis. And of course, seaweed itself offers a vast range of possible applications. So in front of all these possible options, what made you decide to focus on food and food systems?
I love the way that you phrase that question, because I often say the same thing. There are so many solutions to climate change. So why seaweed and why food? And for me, I came from a family where my dad was a big food marketer. He created the Burger King Kids Club. He worked at Pepsi, Frito-Lay, Kellogg's, all of these big CPG brands. And he also ate a lot of those products and drank a lot of those beverages. And, you know, unfortunately, he's developed two heart attacks, two types of cancer, and diabetes. And these are Western diseases caused by Western diet and lifestyle. And I think big CPG has a lot to answer for when it comes to human health. And of course, environmental health, how they're growing food, how they're polluting our water supply with the fertilizers, and what are these glyphosates on our food doing to our body? Cancer rates, digestive cancer rates are up 50% in America and millennial generations. Millennials are the fattest generation in history. And of course, all of this comes back to the planet and how we're treating it. And if we can't treat our bodies well, how can we treat our planet well? So when I was talking about all this at a dinner party, someone said, have you heard of regenerative agriculture? Because it's this new frontier of growing food in harmony with Mother Nature. And I thought, wow, if women ran the world from the beginning, this is just how we'd be growing our food, in my opinion. But we're here now and we're figuring it out. And I was invited to a kelp farm, and they were like, this is regenerative aquaculture. And I got to meet the Green Wave team, and they are so inspiring, and I love their work. And I just drank all of the kelp Kool-Aid and thought, this is a business that I could dedicate the rest of my life to building. And that's helping these kelp farmers grow more kelp by creating a market for it.
If you were to identify a particular moment, event, or conversation that became the spark, the catalyst for starting your company, do you think that trip?
Totally. I remember the exact moment when my friend Brendan, who helped start GreenWave with Bren Smith, he cut a piece of sugar kelp off a rope and I ate it and I had it in my mouth and there's a picture of it and it was so cold and crispy and tasted like the ocean. And I was like, oh my God, this is better than any seaweed salad I've ever had in my life. I want to eat this every day. This is so good. If only for personal consumption, I need to start this business.
And you were not new to seaweed anyway, right?
I had always been eating a lot of seaweed. I was that person in Japanese restaurants who ordered two seaweed salads because I didn't want other people eating it. And, you know, but now I've learned that those seaweed salads are dyed and all of the chlorophyll has been extracted from it and they're full of sugar. But I loved the texture and the taste. And so I started going into Asian grocery stores, making my own seaweed salads. And yeah, at that point, I mean, this was before kelp farming, I just thought it was weird that in Asian countries, people eat seaweeds every day and have for thousands of years. And as a white American, I never was exposed to it, nor were my European friends. So I think the Asians have been holding out on us a little bit on this superfood.
Going off on a tangent, but it's interesting and in a way a bit concerning, in my opinion, that there isn't much of a representation from Asian farmers and companies here today and, you know, the last couple of days.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I think, you know, they're probably like, haha, all the Americans are finally catching on to our seaweed thing. Like, let them do their thing. We've already figured all this out. But I have spoken to a few folks who've stopped by our booth at trade shows, and I remember them saying, wow, you guys have really put an interesting spin on this in terms of all of the climate impact and how this can be a climate solution. We never really discussed that in how we market our products. So leave it to the Americans to figure out a way to kind of storytell around it. And I think they should be here. I think, you know, coming to Maine is a long way. And this is definitely, I think, a smaller conference. And as it grows, hopefully we'll see more global representation.
And we definitely don't want to end up reinventing the wheel.
Correct.
All that we can learn from people that have done it for potentially centuries.
Yeah. Absolutely. I really wanted to go over to Korea and kind of learn more about their farming practices there. And then COVID hit and, you know, just traveling to Asia is like with all the lockdowns and stuff wasn't easy. But I think you're totally right. And that's been a theme of this conference is really trying to work together more and sort of that rising tide lifts all boats mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to address a couple of things we left open. CPG, for an audience that might not be familiar with that term.
So in the States, CPG refers to consumer packaged goods. In the UK, I think it's like fast moving consumer goods. So FMCG. And that's basically any food that is packaged or beverage and sold in a grocery store.
So let's go back on the boat. With Bren Smith and the GreenWave crew. That being the point where you decided, okay, this is what I'm going to do now. What was the plan? And if there wasn't a plan, what were the hopes and expectations?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it was a lot more excitement and hopes and experimentation than necessarily like a business plan. I actually don't think I've ever written a business plan, for better or worse. And we were just really into what can we do with this? Like, there's so many possibilities, you know, from kelp noodles to we had a kelpo noodle concept. We had, you know, kelp salads, kelp soda, kelp tea, kelp Doritos, kelp bars. And I think it was a chef who we met in New York City who had salmon jerky. And I thought, kelp jerky could be really interesting. And at the time, jerky was becoming more of a female snack as well as males because it was becoming softer. Turns out women don't want to rip something out of their mouth like a tough jerky or biltong. And so there was a brand called Crave Jerky that was doing softer jerky and it was women were starting to pick it up. And it's a great snack if you don't have a ton of sugar in it, right? It's like high protein, but I wanted to do a plant-based version of that that was high protein, high fiber, didn't have a lot of sugar, and kind of that RX bar category, you know, all those like bars you pick up that are just sitting in your purse. I wanted to do like a healthier version of that with kelp. So we landed on kelp jerky.
And where is this? Where did you start? Was it your own kitchen? Did you have to rent a space?
We were doing it in a chef's kitchen in the East Village, and the product was amazing coming out of the kitchen. It was really good. It was when we then started to scale it up in what's called a co-packer, so a manufacturer that you don't own, but someone that makes your product, that we started to run into problems.
Is that quite common in the food?
It is, yeah. It's always easier to make something delicious in a kitchen for five people than to try to make something in a facility for 5,000.
A topic that does come up and has come up quite a few times and actually came up just in conversation before we started recording is the importance of listening to the customer, not just falling into the trap of build it and they will come. You've had a really interesting journey in the pursuit of bringing something new and innovative to the market.
Yeah.
Would you mind going through that story and maybe highlight the key lessons along the way?
Of course. My background before Akua was journalism and building online audiences, really. And so we've always started with community and really like all these surveys. Every time someone meets us, how did you learn about us? Where did you come from? What was that journey? What intrigued you about kelp? Do you know what kelp is? You know, how do you want to eat this? How much should it be priced for? How do you want it packaged, etc.? And so yeah, I mean, I think with kelp jerky, we started making these samples in the kitchen and everyone loved it. And then we started scaling up and people were not liking it. And we really quickly realized, well, quickly, in a few months, we realized this isn't the product that's going to take us where we want to go. And that's when we started working on our kelp burger, very much in concerto with our customers, sending them samples, getting their feedback, iterating, et cetera, until we landed on the product we have today.
And I remember you, I think, doing the research for this interview, you talked about what is possibly, correct me if I'm wrong, a turning point in this pivot when you were in 2020 driving to Anaheim Expo.
Yeah, so such a, I think like everyone remembers where they were when the world started falling apart in like that very early March 2020. And I was we had gone to Home Depot to like buy all these plants for our booth to make it look cool with like fully plans to return those plants the next day to save money. And we had this like bright blue minivan that I'd rented on Toro. And my co-founder and I were driving in and our head of marketing couldn't come. And she was really sick and we were totally freaked out. And we were like asking her to like throw us the stickers and the posters down from like her balcony at her apartment because we didn't want to like get near her. And she was like, it's not COVID. It can't be. Da, 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 da. So like sidebar, she actually told me a few months later that her friend from Wuhan had come to stay with her because Wuhan was shutting down and she definitely had COVID. So like patient one there. So she didn't come to the conference with us, thank God. But on the way to Anaheim, we got this email that was like, the show has been canceled. And you had already seen retailers pulling out, the big food companies pulling out, because it was too much of a risk to put their teams through. But we were this little startup. We just had to go. We'd spent like $5,000 on this, right? Anyway, we got refunded, which was amazing. And we went back to Venice, California. And I'll share this on the podcast because it's funny. And we just got like super stoned. We like smoked a joint and we were like sitting there eating Mexican food like, what do we do now? And my co-founder was like, let's start making burgers. And I was like, yes. Like, we've always wanted to do burgers. Our co-packer who makes the jerky kept telling us, your jerky's really tough to make, but we can make burgers. We do salmon burgers and crab cakes and just let us have a go. So we started the recipe development and started working on it with them. And it was much easier to make than kelp jerky.
Huh. So what is the Kelp Beta Burger Club?
Oh my God, it was so much fun. So again, like I'm this like techie, like marketing person, journalist, and I just love the idea of every one of our customers being a part of the company. And it's like, we said, join the Kelp Beta Burger Club, pay $20 every 2 weeks for shipping, and we'll send you new samples of our product and you'll get a survey and you fill it out. And of course, everyone's bored out of their minds sitting at home, you know, on TikTok and whatever. And we got just a really engaged audience giving us feedback on this product. And finally, around the 900th person, like they'd filled out a survey over a few months, everyone just kept saying, this is the best vegan burger I've ever had. And so we were like, boom, like, let's do this. Let's be a burger company. And theoretically, I always loved this idea of our company being more than just a product company and wanting people to come around the table and discuss this kind of higher purpose around eating food. So doing that with a burger is much more fun than doing that with like a bagged snack, you know? And it's like, we could suddenly host dinner parties and just truly bring people together and talk about the issues that were important to us as a company. So I was and I am very excited to be a Kelp Burger Company.
How important at that point was having very good and accurate data sets coming through from your customers?
Extremely important. And it still is, you know, in order to prepare for this conference, we polled like 1,000 of our customers just to check in with them, you know, asking them like, again, why they like the product, where they heard about us, what was important to them about eating this product. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the advantages of being an online business. Even though it's really hard to ship frozen products to people, like it's so expensive. But once you start selling your products into retail stores, you don't know who's buying it, you know, unless you're there sampling every day, which isn't scalable. And so, yeah, I love that touch point with our customers online, and that data has informed so much of everything we do, how we talk about the product, what products we make next, et cetera.
Is this an audience that you had built over time?
Yeah, so we started with a Kickstarter. We had about 1,000 customers that backed the Kickstarter. We raised 70 grand, which was a lot at the time. And
so this is, sorry to interrupt, this is back with
Kelp
with
Jerky.
The jerky.
Okay. Yeah, it was 2019 that we launched Kelp Jerky. And we had, yeah, we just had a mailing list and we were always out there online. And now we have like a 40,000 person mailing list of people who, you know, some, not all of them buy our products, but they're just on our newsletter and, you know, keep learning about what we're doing.
That's a really good pool of...
Yeah.
Personally, I think consumer products, and in particular food products, are a great way to harness the potential of seaweed as possibly the most sustainable crop on earth to replace more traditional ingredients that may be not so sustainable and definitely not regenerative. I'm sure there will be a number of people in the audience that would be interested in understanding how to build a successful seaweed food brand. Looking at the big picture and the general strategies, what do you know today that you wish you knew when you started?
I wish today that I had built a more direct trade relationship with our kelp farmers. We had been always sourcing through like a middleman, like a processing company. And the processing for our products is actually really simple. It's blanching the kelp, it's rough cutting it, it's blixing it, it's bagging it and storing it. And we've been paying a really pretty markup for that. And I want to work directly with our farmers. And that's going to really help lower our costs for the consumer, increase our margins, which will have us, you know, have a healthier, more sustainable business. And so this conference has been amazing because I've got to interface with our farmers and understand they just want to grow their crop and have it picked up on the dock. So how can I kind of build some of that infrastructure, picking it up, bringing it to a facility and turning it into the, you know, the ingredient that goes into our burgers. So I'm really excited to start doing that for next season.
Yeah, all the best with that.
Yeah, thank you.
New adventure. And what is something you change your mind on? And what is something you double down on?
Let's see. I used to go really hard with our climate change messaging. And I really don't think, unfortunately, that that's why consumers buy products. It's why they might follow you on Instagram and it's why they might sign up to your newsletter. But consumers buy products, number one, because of taste, convenience, and three is health benefits. And so we really have started focusing on the health benefits of seaweed because it is amazing and so nutritious and delicious. And then like bonus points, ice cream, you know, on top of the cake for all of the climate benefits too. But we have to get real that we're unfortunately like the people who have purchasing power right now in this country, like don't even understand climate change, let alone a lot of them don't agree with it. And so in order to reach more people and really grow this business and grow kelp and turn the tide on climate change, like we have to focus on things that matter to the consumer. And so we've chosen to really focus on like health and nutrition.
We'll definitely come back to the marketing aspects. I think it's and the storytelling, because I think it's so key for building a brand and something you've done really well.
Thank you.
What is something you double down on?
Oh, yeah. Double down on...
If anything comes to mind. Otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's really easy to create a product and do new flavors of that product. We launched our one little kelp burger box and it sat on that retail shelf and was like kind of getting lost in a sea of Dr. Prager's and Beyond Meat. And so we came out with four new SKUs this year. We were like, fuck it. Like, let's go. And we came out, we hired the woman from Sir Kensington Sauces, and she did a chili sesame burger and a lemon and herb burger that are so delicious. And we launched those SKUs in March. And then in June, we launched our two new SpongeBob SquarePants collaboration. Those are mini burgers for kids of all ages. And so now we have five SKUs on shelf, and it just really helps us pop. So doubling down on just the product, and it's not overly complicated. It's not like we're now making sausages or crab cakes. It's like this is just different flavors and different sizes of what we were already doing.
Okay, so I've got to ask, what did I have yesterday? Because I had the pleasure
of tasting. You had the original kelp burger. So we sell into food service these 3-pound bricks of our ground meat. That is what I sent here to the hotel. He used a burger mold to basically just take that ground meat and stamp it into patties. And that's just the cheapest, most, you know, efficient way to basically feed that many people at once.
I didn't realize. I thought, so that was actually made here. I've put together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, it was really good.
Thank you. Yeah. He did a good job.
Any specific tactics or way of thinking about your work that you found have had a positive impact? If there is anything.
Yeah, I mean, we measure impact in two ways at Akua. So first is the CO2 that is being removed from the ocean by the kelp through photosynthesis. And then we publish, this is how much kelp we've bought, you know, and this is how much CO2 we've removed. Then we look at impact in the carbon avoidance. So if you choose to eat a kelp burger over a beef burger, this is how much CO2 you've avoided creating basically by that changing of your consumer behavior. And I think, you know, both of those things as we grow will become more impactful. You know, I think the CO2 we're sort of avoiding or taking out of the ocean right now is unfortunately pretty minimal compared to, you know, the CO2 that's created from planes, trains, automobiles, and all the other things we do to get around the world.
Just a quick break to remind you of Inside Seaweed newsletter. Would you like to get a super short email from me every month with 3 actionable insights for your seaweed business? I will keep on searching the seaweed industry for the most important lessons, the most useful conclusions, and relevant actions, condensed into a half page that I will share with you each month. It's really easy to sign up and just as easy to cancel. If you'd like to give it a try, head over to insideseaweed.com. Now back to the interview. Okay, let's dive into the marketing and storytelling piece. How do you think about marketing your product? And to a degree, you've already hinted to it. Particularly if there's any unconventional strategies, I'll be interested to understand any unconventional strategies or approaches that you've implemented in marketing and storytelling.
The thing about how to market our products is it's constantly evolving based on the feedback from a growing customer base. When I first started the company, it was all about connecting with an ocean lover and telling that story of ocean gardening versus ocean hunting and sea vegetables and just the exploratory curiosity of bringing something new to your plate from an ocean that you already love. And I think as it's evolved, you know, as I've mentioned, we focused more on the health and the nutrition part. And then also what's come up is that people are buying our products because of how convenient it is. Rip open the bag and in 7 minutes, starts, you have a healthy, sustainable, delicious meal. So we've really started leaning into that. Just like, this is an easy way that you can make lunch for yourself and do all the right things that you want to be doing by your values. And then it comes down to just like, how do you take this product from, I said this yesterday, but like Maine's oceans to mainstream America, right? And we used to feature our farmers all the time and people really love that still. We used to have this like otter that was our mascot and people really loved that. And now, you know, we're working with Mr. SpongeBob SquarePants and like that's, he has like 90% global recognition. Like he's a really well-known character. And so we're really hoping that like we can be doing more things like that, that attach the word kelp to like bigger known entities in the world, whether that's Drew Barrymore or, you know, whoever, but how can we really just take our game to the next level here? Because that's what we need to do, really. This thing needs scale, it needs push. And yeah, I mean, I think talking just about small scale aquaculture in Maine does not resonate with the other 49 states. So you got to figure out ways to do that.
Yeah. And it's a big market, obviously. You want to capture the attention of a lot more people than the little niche.
Yeah, and I think just our product strategy too has been a part of that, right? Like when we started thinking like, what do? We could have done seaweed salads, but it was like plant-based is going to be the most explosive food category in the next couple decades. Like even if we had a slow because people were serving fake meat that's disgusting and not healthy for you, like we know like the next generation coming up, Gen Z is like the most vegan generation in all time. And every time I talk to like a stodgy investor from San Francisco, they're like, yeah, I mean, like I'm not vegan, but my son is, or my daughter is, let me get them out of the room. And it's like amazing to see just like more and more people either going vegan or vegetarian or choosing to eat more plant-based and being flexitarian. So we wanted to like attach to that growing food trend with kelp.
You know how if a food product has got, say, high protein or, I don't know, like a special ingredient, say, olive oil or something like that, usually the packaging is going to tell you about it because it's perceived as a positive factor. When it comes to using seaweed as an ingredient, do you find that it pays to showcase its presence?
Great question.
Or is it actually best to sneak it in?
Yeah, we're experimenting with this right now. I don't know if you saw our SKUs, but we have the kelp burger. We have the chili sesame burger. We have the lemon and herb burger. We have the kelp patties and the BBQ patties. So right now, out of the 5 SKUs we have on shelf, only 2 say kelp with big font. All the rest say made with ocean farm kelp and mushrooms. So we will see what happens. I think it's definitely a great question because people sometimes don't know what kelp is, and maybe they just want a delicious burger and they eat it and then they realize there's kelp in it and that's the way they discover it. And maybe that's the right strategy, but we're in experimental mode on that right now.
That, I think that data will be really interesting.
Totally.
Once you got it, because of course, that's the big question, isn't it? You know, you have conversations. Obviously here, everybody's super receptive to using kelp and all sorts of different species. And there's no, you know, yuck factor with seaweed. Whereas when you start talking to people that are maybe finding out about this industry right then when you're talking to them, they go, oh, I don't know if, you know, the fact that it wearing then on the label would make me more likely to actually buy it or be sort of tempted by it, you know?
Yeah, it's all about finding the right form factors and then like how you're sneaking this stuff in as much of it as you can.
What about the environmental credentials? Because obviously with seaweed come positive environmental impact. And I suppose it could be combined with the regenerative aspect of aquaculture and agriculture potentially. Is that something that, in your opinion, is worth leveraging in terms of marketing?
Yeah, I think we definitely, if you look at our packaging, there's like a whole side that's just like, what is ocean farming? What is kelp? I hope people read that and get really excited about it. Just like, you know, when I always think about like my favorite snacks where it's like, my grandpa created this recipe and like, you know, with love from me to you. And I just think it's awesome. But not everyone reads packaging. So you're already, a consumer who's reading that is already the type of label turner and someone who's like interested in the story. When it comes to like our emails and our Instagram and all that, it's much easier to explain everything and storytell around ocean farming and kelp. I think the more interesting thing that I've realized recently is in the way that we have like an organic certification, I think that there is a lot of work being done around regenerative agriculture certification, but it hasn't yet touched regenerative aquaculture. And so, like, I talked to Whole Foods recently, and they were like, we haven't even thought about the oceans. We're, like, just sort of focused on regenerative ag on land. Like, it's going to be years before we get to, like, understanding regenerative aquaculture. They take these things really slowly and have a very just cautious approach, because you have greenwashing and everyone says something's regenerative, and then the whole word just becomes useless. So I think, like, if we could, A, have, like, a regenerative stamp on our products, that would be huge. And I'd love to see that happen. And then two is, if we could get tax credits for buying food from sources that were regenerative in the same way we get tax credits for buying electric vehicles, I think that's another way that this industry would really grow.
And aquaculture, regenerative aquaculture, and regenerative agriculture are so intertwined that it really makes sense to have something like that.
I think so too, yeah. It's a lot of policy work, right? And it's like, I had a guy from, I think, like, the USDA come up to me last night, and he was like, you know, we're all about promoting U.S. food supply chains abroad. And I'm kind of like, dude, we got to promote them here first. Like, you know, like, we have to figure out how to work with our government to really bolster and subsidize the right kinds of ways to grow food versus the wrong kinds of ways. And then you're going up against meat lobby groups, dairy lobby groups, and it is going to be tough. People die doing that. Like, no joke, right? Like, you know, there's been doctors who found non-patentable solutions to cancer that you've never heard of again because they're gone. This is like, you're going up against big pharma, you're going up against big food, you're going, it's tough, but it has to happen.
And even in the best scenario, is not going to be a particularly quick process either.
Unfortunately not. And so for a brand like Akua, it's about how do we stay alive? How do we stay alive when this is going to take a really long time?
Okay, going back to the, on that note, going back to the sort of marketing and your customers in particular, I'm thinking, out of all the amazing qualities we talked about linked to your products, what do you see as the main reason people buy your product? And I sort of want to understand where the environmental piece fits in.
It's the last reason people buy our products. 1 through 5. 1, convenience. 2, taste. 3, the overall health benefits of our products. 4, the overall health benefits of kelp in our products. 5, environmental sustainability.
This is not what most people hear.
I told everyone this on stage yesterday.
I think it's such an important
message. I was like, sorry,
message.
Farmers, but people don't care. It's so sad. People, of course, care. And I'm being facetious, but it is just not why someone spends money on food.
It's not the top priority, or the second, or the third.
Maybe in the next generation, but I don't think that 18, 20-year-olds have a lot of money right now. So let's see what happens in another 10 years. But I think baby boomers are seeking out foods for health as their health declines. I think millennials are seeking out delicious, tasty products that are easy to cook up and good for them. And this next generation hopefully will be more motivated by climate.
So if you're 20 years old, just go make some money.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they need to, you know, they will. And I mean, I'm 38 and I'm still really not making that much money. So it does take time. But I think, you know, I'm 38. I don't make a ton of money, but I spend it all on food because I care deeply. I care very deeply about ingredients. I'm always looking at labels. I'm very conscious of the fact that people are getting sick from our food supply chains. And so what I love about regenerative ocean farming is just like, we are testing these waters, we are testing this kelp, we are testing the final products, and it's new. And so we can do things the right way versus tapping into old soybean supply chains that have just been so overly commoditized and are probably all sprayed with glyphosates and crap like that.
Who are your customers? Have you identified any?
Oh, yeah. So 60% women, but I actually think it's even higher when you classify who buys in grocery stores. A lot of women are purchasing for their household, although it's split in my household, to be fair. I don't want to throw my husband under the bus there. He does some good amount of grocery shopping. He's mostly the cook in the family. And because I'm that person, by the way, who's not a chef, I created this product because I need to eat healthy fast from frozen. Like, I, you know, people are like, oh, did you develop, like, are you the food scientist? I'm like, nope. You know, like someone that can try something and they're like, oh, I can taste the hint of parsley and lime. Not me, unfortunately. So our consumers are also very interesting. Of course, vegans, but the biggest group is flexitarians. They're people who are just curious about food. They eat everything, but mostly trying to eat plant-based. Like, and those are the folks we focus on. I don't think that we're doing ourselves any favors by banging people over the heads with eat kelp and go vegan. It's like two very strong messages. So we try to say, like, it's okay if you're not vegan. I'm not vegan. You know, I eat like tons of seafood. I hang out with freaking kelp farmers all the time who are like selling me their oysters and lobster. I mean, it's amazing. And I don't think that everyone going vegan is going to solve all of our problems, nor do I think that's realistic. So we just want to help people, whether you're subbing out meat a couple times a week for something that's easy and delicious, like that's a win in my book. When it comes to our demographics, so obviously it's millennials, biggest purchasing power right now. I'm a millennial. You know how to market to yourself. So that's kind of like where that went. We were like, okay, this is for busy millennials who want to cook up food fast. And then number two is baby boomers are huge for us, which is amazing. But I also don't know if that's just because baby boomers are filling out surveys more than anyone else. I would argue that's probably skewed. But I think it's also true because every time I hear someone, they're like, oh my God, my mom loves these products. Like, she always has them. And I'm like, okay, that's great. And I think baby boomers are, again, looking for more health conscious foods. I think there's a class of baby boomers, particularly in blue states around coastlines, who've seen a lot of environmental degradation in their lives. And so are paying more attention to their food sources and maybe even feeling guilty for all of that happened in the 80s to get us here. And then what we're doing with SpongeBob is trying to reach that millennial mom consumer and also that growing generation of kids. So, you know, we really are widening our customer base, hopefully, with that product collaboration.
Yeah. Do you think it would be, when I say damaging, but to push the climate message more, would it be potentially alienate some of your customers?
I do. I really do. And I learned that the hard way. When we were working with Nickelodeon, you know, they really helped me understand that, like, sometimes we can't go so hard with our climate messaging because, like, not everyone who loves SpongeBob is, like, necessarily that extreme right now. And I want our company to be big, and I want our company to also reach that rancher in Texas who's pro-fracking and, you know, is like probably voting for Trump. I want him to eat a kelp burger. And if I'm banging him over the head with climate change messaging, like, he's going to feel alienated. And we live in such a divided country right now. And so it's like maybe health and nutrition is something that people don't find bipartisan, and they can they can come around the table and kind of agree, yeah, we have a health crisis. This is not a blue versus red state issue, you know? So, I think that climate, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who, I mean, I spend a lot of time in Florida. It's insane. I literally heard this woman next to me bashing her friend over the head that climate change was like completely made up. And I'm like, you, and I actually said something because I was like, you know, your state is going to be underwater in like a couple decades. Like, you are so in the midst of it. And, but yeah, so yes, I think it can set the movement back a bit if you're too strong on that.
And maybe things will change. We've got to hope.
Maybe. We can certainly hope. Yeah, I feel like Luke and Leia right now. Yeah, fighting the dark side.
Yeah, we'll get there. I'm going to switch gear to a degree. I can't speak for the seaweed industry, of course, but I feel that in general, this world doesn't necessarily know or understand much about the food industry. I think you said it yourself. We are a bit in a bit of a bubble sometimes. Mm-hmm. What do you think seaweed entrepreneurs should know about the food industry? And what are the considerations that we should make as a result of that?
Yeah, I mean, first, if there's seaweed entrepreneurs listening to this, like, Akua is more than happy to lend support and help and guidance. So please reach out. I always joke that I think the hardest part about making food at scale is making food at scale. It's that transition from the kitchen to a co-packer and figuring out, like, what is your competitive advantage with that co-packer? Because we haven't really figured that out yet. Like, our co-packer charges us a lot of money and they're like, here's your invoice. If you don't pay it in 5 days, like, you're in trouble. It's a really tough relationship, but obviously what they're doing is really tough, right? They're making food that we are expecting every kelp burger in every box to taste and look the same. And that's crazy. And that's like kind of our problem with the food industry in general is like, I love Alice Waters. She's like such an icon in the food industry. And she's a chef out of San Francisco. Her restaurant's called Chez Panisse. And she was just like, why should people in Utah be able to buy peaches in February? Why does someone who goes and gets a taco in LA expect that taco at the same chain to taste the same in New York City? Like, you know, like how do we not realize that food in a natural habitat is just always going to taste different season to season? And so with our kelp, like we're buying it from different farms, some are in Massachusetts, some are in Maine, and that kelp looks and tastes a little bit different. And so each product that we create on the world might have some variation, but consumers see that as a bad thing. And so the co-packer relationship is really important. I'd say that that's really, really tricky. And also just choosing a product that is not necessarily reinventing the wheel. With burgers, they're already made out there, right? A lot of people make veggie burgers. Kelp jerky had to be, each piece had to be in a custom mold. We had to make like molds for our product that then went into a dehydrator. Like that was so dumb, like that we went down that route because it was so expensive and not scalable. So yeah, you have to. And finding co-packers is crazy. Like these guys don't have websites. Like they don't even have like iPhones. They're all in these like green text message threads, you know, with like Android users. And you got to like know the guy who knows the guy. And it's really hard. So that would be my first stop. Don't set up an Instagram. Don't think about your branding. Think about how you're going to make the product.
I was going to say something and I completely forgot. That's why I should write stuff down. But hey, that gives me the opportunity to say something else that I wrote down, which is your presentation yesterday. The slides will be
They're
on LinkedIn.
Already on LinkedIn. So fantastic. On my profile. And then I also did a post yesterday.
So I'll put a link on the show notes as well. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
What do you think are the most common mistakes that people as in seaweed entrepreneurs are making when approaching food products? You probably already mentioned it.
I think that the biggest learning and mistake, and when I try other people's seaweed products, it's two things. So one is how much seaweed is too much seaweed to put in a product. Really fascinating. Out of literally like the thousands of surveys we've done, 50% of people can taste the kelp and 50% can't. And the only really thing, and I should always add a follow-up question to this, and I haven't, is have they eaten kelp before in their lives? So do they know what they're looking for in that taste? And I think that's it. I think if you've never had kelp, you're not sure what you're tasting. And so that's super interesting. And that's the right balance. Because if you're trying to reach people who've never had kelp before, or a lot of people don't like fishy tastes, kelp jerky was 70% kelp. And it was just way too much for people. They were like, oh my God, you know, like, what is this? And I tried a product recently. It's a company called Rootless, and there she's doing these little bites. And for me, it was just way too seaweed tasting. And I gave her that feedback, and I was like, you know, why don't you just put some chocolate and dates in here, you know, just to like almost mask that seaweed flavor. And anyway, so that's one thing. I think kelp has a, you know, it's a very umami taste, but when it's dried, it gets like really seaweedy. And so using fresh kelp versus dried is definitely something for people to think about. Also, what type of seaweed? You know, I think someone sent me like a seaweed juice the other day, and really all that was in it was agar, which is like more of a binding filler than actually something interesting like kelp with tons of health benefits and whatnot. So what type of seaweed you use matters. Agar, and carrageenan are also very industrialized seaweeds at this point versus kelp, which is, you know, such a new cool industry. And I think people should definitely use more kelp in their products, obviously.
What about other species? Do you think there is a place for it?
I do. So at the moment, I mean, skinny kelp and sugar kelp are the two most commonly farmed ones. Those are the only ones we use in our products. I am completely open to using any types of seaweed. There's a reason we're called Akua, not the kelp company. I want to use all sorts of regenerative food sources in our products. Yeah, I have seen land-based dulse growing in tanks or sea lettuce growing in tanks. And I think the tank thing's interesting. You definitely lose that like sustainability story though a bit. And so a funny story, just to sidebar, a farmer once told me he can never grow dulse in the ocean because it's too delicious and all the fish eat it. but I'd love to use Dulce because it's so delicious. And so, yeah, we really want to start experimenting with more seaweeds, but it all comes down to sustainability, cost, availability.
I'm going to go back to a few things we left, mainly because I forgot, but now I remember.
Okay.
Which was, you seemed to suggest that in building a brand and building a, a seaweed product, a food product, simplification is key. Why is that important?
Because kelp, using the new kelp supply chain of ocean farming, is already so complicated. So everything else you can do should be simple. If you were taking a very standard like chickpea and you wanted to go make pasta and waffles and pizza out of it like Bonza did, fine. Because the chickpea supply chain is very established. But yeah, I think when you're just starting out with something new like kelp, choosing something simple where there are already established processes for making something out of it, or and co-packers that can do something with it interesting. Like there's a company called Sea and Flower that does kelp bread, which is such a great example, right? They're just putting a little bit of kelp in the bread. Everyone eats bread, unfortunately. A lot of bread. Yeah, I mean, they're choosing kind of like what is that easy food source that people eat a lot of, and just maybe adding a bit of kelp to it, I think is a really good idea.
And again, it's a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not too much, which is interesting because I was actually talking to somebody last night during the evening event, and she is originally from China, and she was saying, it sounds like here people want to hide the seaweed from food products. Mm. And she was like, but why? It's got that umami taste, and why isn't front, right, and center? Which is interesting because it's exactly the opposite of what would make more sense for, I suppose, Western customers.
Yeah. But the way that our brains work around food is it's super tied to memory and smell. And we didn't grow up eating seaweed. So you have to create new memories, and you got to do that little bit by little bit. Obviously, someone like the woman you were talking to last night was probably fed seaweed like from birth. And so she has all these wonderful memories with it. And so hopefully with the next generation of SpongeBob kelp patty eaters, you know, they're going to wake up when they're 20 and see something made from kelp and be like, oh my God, I grew up eating kelp patties. Like that's a memory. It's just going to take time because, you know, I grew up eating, unfortunately, like Burger King Kids Club.
Yeah, it's not easy at all to change habits and sort of people perception.
Yeah.
It feels like certainly it's not a good idea to force it into people.
You can't. Yeah, you can't. It's like that, you know, leading a horse to water thing. I think that kelp is for the curious eaters to start. And that's what I'm saying at this conference. This is all just going to take a lot longer than we think.
Okay, Courtney, this has been really, really fun.
Yeah, no, thank you so much.
Thank you for taking the time.
No, this was awesome. Thank you so much for starting a podcast on seaweed.
My pleasure. It's been fun so far. And, you know, it gets me to talk to people like you, which is really a pleasure.
Excellent.
Is there anything else you would like to mention in closing? Final message?
Oh, yeah, babes. We are fundraising on Republic right now. So excellent. If you listen to this podcast, you can go to republic.com/Akua/CSB for SpongeBob. Or you can just go to our website, akua.co, and click on the big link you'll find there. And for $100, you can become an investor in Akua, which is pretty cool.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Where can people find Akua's product?
So if you go to akua.co, our website, that's .co, not .com, you will find, you can buy them, we ship nationwide online. And also there is our store locator, and hopefully you can find a grocery store or restaurant that serves them near you.
I was going to ask whether it was US only or whether you have plans to expand.
We would love to bring our products to Europe. I would love to bring our products to Asia. Can you imagine? Like all that work we've done to convince people to eat kelp. I don't have to do any of that. But it's going to take time because it's expensive to expand.
Watch the space.
Watch the space.
Thanks so much to all of you who have joined live over the last couple of days. I'm used to recording interviews, but having a live audience really makes it feel special. And of course, I loved being in person and talking here.
Definitely.
It really makes a difference.
Where do you guys go back home to?
Bristol, UK.
Great. Well, UK, actually, I had someone reach out about exporting our products. So that makes sense as our next stop. I mean, you know, we're basically from the same country, right?
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's all, just a little
poem. We're all English. England. Iglunch. Maybe I'm getting hungry.
That's the right time.
English.
It's goodbye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. All the best and take care.